While his catchphrase may be, it stinks, this show certainly doesn't. Today, we're talking about The Critic.
Everything is fantastic!
Hello and welcome again to another episode of Everything is Fantastic. I'm your host, Chris McGinnis, and today, continuing with the back-to-school-slash-new-beginnings theme of September, we're looking at the pilot episode of The Critic. Now, you may be saying to yourself, Chris, we're way more than halfway through the month of September. Surely everyone that would be starting school has been back for quite a few weeks now. To which I say, true. But at least let me get through this half-assed hackneyed theme that I came up with. And that being said, today we're looking at The Critic, the 1994 animated sitcom from created by Al Jean and Mike Reese, also prominent staff members on The Simpsons, and starring John Lovitz as Jay Sherman, the titular critic. I don't think that this show gets merely enough love and recognition. It's definitely a very underrated show, and it's one of the few shows out there that's had life on two networks. Its first season, which was on ABC, and second season, which was on Fox. In fact, I'm going to take a look at the first episodes of both seasons. Not all in one episode, mind you. That'd be nuts. So today we're starting with the first episode of The Critic period, which was the first episode of season one, and the first episode on ABC called simply Pilot, since it's the pilot episode. So we begin the episode with the title sequence, like many shows on TV had back in the 90s. Much like the title sequence of The Simpsons, with their chalkboard and couch gags, the title sequence of The Critic also has a duo of rotating gags that occur near the beginning and end of the sequence. The first is what I'll dub the wake-up gag. We zoom into Jay Sherman's apartment, and depending on what season and network it is, he's woken up by either a phone call or a news story broadcast on his alarm clock radio. In this instance, it's a phone call from his mother. She informs Jay that he's being taken out of both her and his father's wills because they believe he already has enough money. She follows the statement up by wishing Jay a happy birthday, and then hangs up the phone. The second gag is the coming attractions gag, where we see a clip of a film that Jay's reviewing on his show, also entitled Coming Attractions. This clip shows a scene similar to something out of Alien 3, where a woman who is not quite Ripley is cornered by one of the aliens. As she cringes in fear, the alien opens its mouth, and a smaller alien, on a tongue-like protrusion, extends out and kisses Ripley on the cheek. Everyone smiles, and Jay declares, "It stinks." With the title sequence finished, we now start the episode. We begin with a shot of Jay looking depressed as he sits in his makeup chair. Doris, the makeup artist, asks Jay what's wrong. Jay says he's 36, he's lonely, and since he's bald, his hair comes out of a spray can. Jay tells Doris not to bother with the hair in a can, he wants to go out there and show the world who he really is. Doris shakes the can, telling Jay that it's empty, and he panics, saying, "He's hideous, get more!" We then cut to Jay on the set of Coming Attractions, wearing Doris's baseball hat that reads, "World's Greatest Granny." The first film he reviews is Home Alone 5.
We left Kevin home alone! And he's only 23!
But first, a look at Arnold Schwarzenegger's latest film, Rabbi P.I., the story of a Chicago cop who goes undercover as a Hasidic Jew. We see a scene of Arnold walking down a city street at night in full rabbi regalia. He's stopped by a mugger who pulls a gun on him and says, "Eat lead, Rabbi." Arnold replies, "Sorry, that's not kosher," and whips out a shotgun. Cut to another scene where a formally dressed man says to Arnold, "If you're a real rabbi, circumcise this child." Instead, Arnold turns around and flings a scalpel into the other man's chest, killing him. Arnold quips, "Hava Nagila, baby." We cut back to Jay and says that because he loves his audience, he won't force them to watch the musical number. Then he changes his mind and says he'll just show a little bit. Now, because I love you people, I won't stoop to the same level as Jay did and make you listen to the musical number. Nah, I'm kidding. Here it is!
Dreidel, 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 I made you out of clay.
Jay sums up his feelings in the movie thusly. Feh. And I know that it doesn't have quite the same impact in podcast form, but envision Arnold Schwarzenegger dressed as a rabbi as a pinkish dreidel spins on the table in front of him as he sings. Or go to YouTube and search for them. I'm sure you can find it on there. Anyway, on the Shermometer, a feature that the audience loves most but Jay finds humiliating, he rates the movie an absolute zero and shivers as if he's freezing. The floor director calls cut, and Doris walks in with a new spray can and starts applying its contents to Jay's head. Jay likes the feel of it and asks Doris where she got it. Doris says she saw some kids using it to spray paint the words King Dork on Jay's car. Just then, Duke Phillips, Jay's boss and the head of the network, kicks open the doors to the studio and walks in. Duke asks Jay why he has to be so critical all the time, and Jay responds it's because he's a critic. Duke says that Jay's job is to rate movies on a scale from good to excellent. Jay asks what if he doesn't like the movie. Duke says that's what the rating of good is for. A PA informs Duke that they're back on the air in 5 seconds, and Duke responds that he owns the network and tells them to put up a picture of him on a horse to stall for time. They do. Duke tells Jay that what he's doing is an art, it's just mindless pablum for losers that can barely read. And that reminds Duke, he has an interview with People Magazine. Duke gives them this poignant quote, "I have no one to envy. I envy you for you having me to envy." Deep. The show returns from commercial and it's time for a segment called Star Poop, another title that Jay obviously loathes. Jay welcomes a young actress whose first film premieres soon, Valerie Fox. She is a tall, leggy brunette, and Jay is stunned by her appearance. Jay tells Valerie that he hasn't seen her movie yet, and Valerie suggests they not talk about the movie. They should talk about Jay. Jay says that's his favorite subject and tries to be suave, leaning back in his chair. Unfortunately, this causes him to fall off the circular platform on the set as there's no wall behind him. As he recovers, Valerie tells Jay that she's his biggest fan. Jay says he doesn't have any fans. Most of the people who watch the show are drunken fat frat boys who like to make fun of him. And we cut to a basement showing a group of frat boys with beers watching the show. One of them standing near the TV, he uses his hand to make it look like Jay's picking his nose. The others are highly entertained. Back on set, Valerie says that she finds intelligent men to be very sexy and tells Jay that he's the smartest man on television. Jay responds with a guttural throat-clearing noise. Truly the most refined response. Valerie asks Jay to have dinner with her, and Jay says he couldn't. She's an actress, he's a critic, there's an insatiable line between them. Jay then quickly corrects himself, saying invisible line, but it's too late. His infatuation is obvious. Jay tells Valerie he'll join her for dinner, but first asks if they can have a discussion about her movie, because he thinks that's what the audience is interested in seeing. Cut back to the frat house basement, and the same frat boy from earlier is holding his beer bottle up near the TV screen to make it look like Valerie is drinking a beer. Unfortunately, he tilts his bottle a little too much and spills beer on the TV, causing it to short out. His brothers take it well and begin throwing their beer bottles and cans at him. Back on the set, Valerie says that she hates that the studio sends her on these talk shows and expects her to act like some sort of femme fatale. Jay says he understands the pressure to be sexy, which is why he's wearing some tight size 42 pants. Valerie giggles in response. Jay steers the conversation back to the film, saying that someone compared Valerie's role in her new movie, Kiss of Death, to Sharon Stone's in Basic Instinct. Jay asks if she agrees with the comparison, and Valerie replies that she finds comparing actresses very demeaning and asks Jay if he agrees, mimicking the famous moment from Basic Instinct where Sharon Stone crosses her legs. We get a close-up of Jay, and he asks the camera if they can get a shot of that. We cut to Jay and Valerie pulling up outside a restaurant, and we see King Dork has indeed been spray-painted on Jay's car. The valet notices and asks why it's there. Jay says he bought the car from King Dorkenheimer of Finland. The valet replies he thought that Finland was a constitutional democracy, and Jay tells him to just park the car. Jay and Valerie enter L'Enriche, which we see translates to the Wealthy Jackass. The owner, maitre d', Vladimir Vermevich, greets Jay at the host station and says he saved the best table in the place, perfect for the schmoozing. As Vlad leads them to the table, he sees that Conan O'Brien has entered the restaurant and hurriedly seats them at the first empty table he sees, sprinting back to the entrance. Now, to give some context, the show aired in 1994, many years before Conan was the comedic talk show host dynamo we know and love these days. The joke being that even though Jay is a well-known cable TV film critic, he ranks lower in the celebrity food chain than someone who, at that time, was considered a third-string, at best, late-night talk show host. Anyway, after Vlada leaves, Jay sourly observes that they've been seated in the critics section. The camera pans through the section showing tables of dissatisfied-looking people, and we hear snippets of negative conversation in the background. It ends with film critic Gene Shalit giving a glowing review to a plate of angel hair pasta as he leaves the room. We cut back to Jay and Valley's table, and Jay asks her if she used to be a model. Valley figures she'll get this all out of the way. Yes, she was a model. Yes, she was a beauty queen. Yes, she used to quote-unquote date Donald Trump. We get a POV shot of Jay staring at Valley's cleavage. She catches him, and he admits that he was sneaking a peek at her McGuffey's in a stumbling attempt at intimacy. Valerie says if that's what he's looking for, to look into her eyes. Jay does, and we see a look of genuine affection in Valerie's face. Jay responds very smoothly.
Oh ye gods!
We cut to Jay's apartment later that night. Valerie's looking at various photos that Jay has out on display. She picks up a wedding portrait, and Jay says that the marriage didn't work out. We get a flashback showing Jay's wife tearfully saying to him that she doesn't know why she ever married him. And then the camera pulls back to show them still standing on the altar as the crowd throws rice in celebration. Back to the present, Valerie holds up a plaque and asks Jay what it is. Jay tells her that it's his Pulitzer Prize. Then corrects himself, noting that the Pulitzer Prize is a little to the left on the shelf. The award she's holding is something Jay won at summer camp. Valerie asks what the prize was for, and we see Jay remembering a pie-eating contest. But Jay lies and tells Valerie that he doesn't remember. Valerie's about to leave, but she says she can't bring herself to do it. Once the door to Jay's apartment closes, whether she's inside or outside, that could change the course of their lives forever. Jay takes Valerie's hand and escorts her into the apartment, closing the door behind them. After the door shuts, Jay asks Valerie what she does in the movie. Valerie replies, "I play a woman who seduces chubby men and then kills them in their sleep." Jay responds, "Interesting," and we get an act break. Back from break, and it's the next morning. Jay is awake and looking lovingly at Valerie, who's still sleeping, observing that she looks perfect from every angle. Valerie wakes up and she sees Jay's face as if looking at him through a fisheye lens, and screams in horror. Jay says he'll excuse himself to the bathroom so Valerie can make a dignified escape, but she tells him not to because she really enjoyed last night. They kiss. Suddenly we hear a small voice pipe up saying, "Dad, you're out of Doritos!" Jay screams out in surprise to see his son Marty is in his apartment. Jay asks Marty what he's doing here, and Marty says that they were going to go shopping for Husky pants together that day, and then later they'd go to the ice cream place, and Jay would tell him it's his birthday again. Jay excuses himself from the bedroom and goes to talk with his son. Out in the living room, Jay and Marty have a talk.
"Now, son, you may just have noticed there was a beautiful woman in my bed."
"I won't tell anyone."
"Actually, I wish you would tell everyone, particularly your mother and her personal trainer, Alberto."
"He says I should call him Uncle Al now."
"That's crazy. Why should you do that?"
"'Cause he's such a great guy and I like him so much."
"Ugh."
We then cut to Jay and Valerie out on a walk. We see them kissing in front of Trump Tower. When they pull away, we see a banner reading "In Foreclosure" in front of the building. As they walk, Valerie tells Jay she's going to say something and she thinks he knows what it is. "Buzz off," guesses Jay. "No, it's actually, I love you." Jay is so stunned he has no idea how to respond. Valerie prompts him to say it also, and so Jay grabs a bullhorn from a nearby policeman and yells, "I love you!" into it. The sound travels, and we pan up to see a man standing on the ledge of a building. Having heard Jay's declaration of love, he climbs back inside the building, tearfully saying that was all he needed to hear. Cut to Lon Rich, and Jay is having lunch with his best friend, Australian actor and heartthrob Jeremy Hawke. Jay calls Vlad over and asks him to replace the current picture of him on the wall with a new picture of he and Valerie together. Jay looks up at the wall to find the space empty and asks Vlad where the picture is. Vlad doesn't answer, and we cut to the kitchen where we see it's being used as a cutting board. A chef recoils in horror after clearing some chopped carrots off of it to see Jay's portrait. Back to the table, a young woman walks up and asks Jeremy for his autograph, saying she loved him in Crocodile Dundee. Jeremy tells Jay that some people enjoyed the movie, and Jay replies that he didn't think Jeremy made a very convincing Mahatma. And we get a clip from the movie.
"I will bring peace between the Hindu and the Muslim. But first, a tasteful glimpse of me bottom for the ladies."
Jay tells Jeremy not to be so smart because he has a share of fans also. An elderly woman walks up to Jay and asks if she can rub his hump. Jay says she doesn't. He has a hump, and the woman responds, "Oh, you hunchbacks are so sensitive," and tries rubbing her elbows on Jay's back until he yells at her to go away. Just then, Valerie spots Jay from another table and says she'll be right over. Jay instantly gets worried that if Valerie meets Jeremy, she won't want him anymore. Jeremy, ever the encouraging friend, said that he doesn't blame Jay. Women seem to love him no matter what he does. He tried not shaving. He tried not bathing. He even tried talking in a voice similar to Bullwinkle's, like this. But nothing worked. Jay introduces Valerie to Jeremy, and she merely gives him a terse hi and doesn't pay any more attention to him. Valerie kisses Jay and tells him she'll see him tonight and walks off. Jay gloats over his victory, and Jeremy congratulates him on finding such a wonderful girl. Jay says he's thinking of asking her to marry him, and Jeremy changes his tune completely, dragging Jay out into a fire escape to talk with him. Jeremy tells Jay to never marry an actress, and also never do blackface at the NAACP Awards. Two things that he learned from his personal experience. Jay says he loves Valerie and he's taking her to meet his parents. Jeremy offers this sage wisdom.
Jay, we have a saying in Australia. Well, it's not really a saying, it's a drinking song. It's about a bottle of beer and the men who loved her. And it doesn't really apply here, but my advice to you is slow down.
Why are you telling me this?
Because you're the only decent guy I've met in this dreadful country. I love you, mate.
Wow, that's twice in one day.
I love you too.
You just love my money.
That is true. But it is a love that will never die.
So nice of Vlada to chime in at the end there, hmm? Anyway, we then cut to Jay and Valerie pulling up to a huge mansion. Jay says that there's something he should tell Valerie about her parents. At that moment, the door opens and we are first introduced to Franklin and Eleanor Sherman, quite possibly the waspiest couple ever captured in animation. Valerie immediately realizes, "You're adopted!" Jay simply replies, "Well, duh." Cut to Jay, Valerie, and his family at the dinner table. Jay introduces Valerie to his younger sister, Margot. She's a junior at Miss Hathaway's School for Untouched Girls. Margot seems suspicious about whether Valerie's affection for her brother is genuine as she watches him scarf down his food and clamp his ears while at the table. Franklin speaks up, saying that he saw Jay's show the other night and asks him if he's doing the weather now. Margot tries to explain about the thermometer, but Franklin goes on asking if it's going to snow, saying they could use some snow since they've had the chains on the tires since July. Jay tells Valerie that his father had a stroke a few years ago. Eleanor speaks up, saying he didn't really, but we just say that to explain his personality. Franklin says the peanut is neither a pea nor a nut, and a long, awkward silence follows. Margot breaks the silence by saying that she heard that Valerie's an actress. Valerie says that this is true, and her first movie comes out soon. The rest of the dinner plays out like this.
Oh, I see. You're just dating my son till he gives you a good review. Then you'll drop him and he'll be back here with one of those nice girls from the escort service.
I am not dating your son for a good review. I just hope that after he sees the movie, he doesn't stop loving me.
I'm not going to stop loving you after I've been decaying in the ground for 200 years.
Can't one dinner go by where we don't talk about your rotting corpse?
Sorry.
I'm sure Valerie loves you. I only brought it up because we care about you. That's why we finally decided not to give you back to the orphanage.
You're thinking of giving me back?
Oh, son, if I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times.
After dinner, Jay takes Valerie on a walk of the grounds of the mansion. They pass by the stables, and Jay tells her about his disastrous 8th birthday party. A clown scared him, and he wet his pants. Everyone called him Wee-Wee. Valerie says that kids can be so cruel. One of the stable workers calls out to Jay, "Hiya, Wee-Wee, still wetting them drawers?" Jay tells him to shut up, and the stableman replies, "Sure thing, Mr. W." Margot invites Valerie to go horseback riding with her, and Valerie gladly accepts. Valerie asks Jay if he's going to come along, and Jay declines, saying that he had a bad experience with a horse. We get a flashback, and we see a young stableman talking to Jay as a child.
"Now, before I let you ride the pony, are you sure you weigh less than 80 pounds?
Yeah.
No!"
Yep, they went ahead and killed a pony in the first episode of their show. That's dark. Funny, but still dark. Anyway, Valerie and Margot ride on, and Margot tells Valerie that this is the ride she usually takes with her brother's girlfriends when they admit that they're just using him. Valerie asks why it seems so hard for everyone to believe she genuinely loves Jay. Margot says that for one thing, his butt sticks out like an air conditioning. We cut to Jay elsewhere on the grounds. He finds a daffodil growing and bends over to pick it, only to knock over a birdbath with his butt. Valerie says that she meets good-looking guys all the time, but she's never met anyone as smart, funny, and appreciates her as much as Jay does. This satisfies Margot. Aw, great. Welcome to our crappy family, she says. Cut to Jay and Marty at an ice cream parlor. Marty says that he's never seen his dad so happy, and asks if it has anything to do with the naked lady that was in his bed. Jay tells his son that the key to building a lasting relationship is a foundation of love and trust. Failing that, tell them you have a tumor. Either way, the key word is growth. Marty doesn't understand. Jay says that there's a showing of Valley's movie that night, but he's going to fake sick so he doesn't have to go and review it. Marty asks, isn't that lying? And Jay says that one should only lie in rare circumstances where the good outweighs the bad as a result. Two young ladies walk up to Jay, and one of them says, my friend and I have a bet. Are you Dustin Hoffman? Jay mulls this over a couple of seconds and then responds, yes, and we get our second act break. Back from break, and Jay is on his couch watching MJNN, the Michael Jackson News Network, with bureaus was in Shanghai, Bangkok, and Disneyland. There's a knock on the door. It's Valerie. She's come to see Jay since she heard he was sick. Jay tells Valerie that she's made him very happy and brings her inside. He's wearing a purple bathrobe, she's wearing a yellow dress, and so we get a dream sequence of them dancing together in a parody of the ballroom scene from Disney's Beauty and the Beast, complete with household items, in this case a dustbuster and a toilet, singing a song about beauty and King Dork. Later that night, while Valerie's asleep, Jay's awoken by a knock at his door. It's a PA from the network, and they sent him over a tape with Kiss of Death since Jay missed the screening, and Duke wants him to review it for the show tomorrow. Jay's distraught. My shrink was right! God does hate me! And he starts crying and banging his head on the doorframe. Jay sits down to watch the tape and tempts fate.
How bad could she be? She's wonderful!
Come on, baby. Give me a kiss.
Oh, I'll give you a kiss, all right. A kiss of death!
Hachi Machi! She's awful!
Jay then sits down to write a letter to Valerie. Resigned to his fate, he tells her that he's going to review her film. If you're here when I come back, I'll know our lovely meant something. If not, I'll know why. He leaves the letter by a sleeping Valerie in bed and snaps a quick Polaroid picture before he leaves, just in case she is gone when he comes back. Classy. Cut to Jay sitting in a taxi cab on his way to work. He starts to ask the driver if he's ever loved a woman so much that, and the driver cuts him off saying, look at sign, indicating a sign that reads, driver only speaks three words of English. Cut to Jay in the makeup chair with Doris spraying his hair on. Jay says he's going to do a review that might cost him the woman he loves and wonders if this job is worth the $271,000 a year he makes. Doris is shocked at the amount of Jay's salary and her cigarette drops out of her mouth and onto Jay's head, igniting the top of it. Jay tells Doris to put him out and she quickly throws a towel over. He accuses her of doing that on purpose, and Doris says, so what if she did? She's a union. Back to the set of coming attractions. Tonight, we look at Family Affair, the movie. We see a short clip of Marlon Brando playing the butler, Mr. French, which he was apparently paid $8 million to do. But first, the new romantic thriller, Kiss of Death. Jay says you can't review the movie without reviewing the lead actress, Valerie Fox, and sums things up saying, she's beautiful and tries hard, but God bless her sweet face. She wasn't very good in the movie. Jay tries to find a silver lining to say that a lot of actresses started not so great, but got better. Brilliant, even. Sally Fields, Cher, those adorable Olsen twins on Full House. Jay dejectedly hangs his head, knowing he's likely lost Valerie. Though a more pressing issue seems to be that Jay's nose is bigger than her father's foot while seen on the family's big screen television. We cut to Jay's apartment. He asks the doorman if a beautiful woman left his apartment that day, and the doorman replies he doesn't know since he's been drinking in the alley all morning. Jay heads upstairs and opens his door, thrilled to see Valerie still there. She slaps him numerous times after he greets her. The last words to Jay are, you're short, you're fat, and even for a film critic, you're ugly. She walks out of the apartment and Jay follows her. Oh, I see, you want me to beg, he says. Well, there's one thing you didn't count on. I have no pride. So he starts to beg Valerie to come back to him as she gets on the bus and pulls away. Behind him, a woman skulks by angrily as a man says he'll stop gambling if she comes back to him. Jay derides this guy as a loser. From the other direction, an Asian woman walks by angrily, and Woody Allen follows her saying, Sun Yi, I swear I didn't know she was your sister. Wikipedia's your friend if you don't get that reference, folks. Anyway, Jay has followed Valerie to the airport, saying that he knows a lot of people think he's a cynic, but he claims he's not because he knows she's going to come back to him right now. He says that he watches Valerie board a plane for Paris. And as he watches the plane take off, and repeats it one last time as several hours have passed and there's no one in the airport except for him and the janitor washing the floor. Jay sniffles a few times and the scene fades to black. Fade up and we're seeing Jay and Marty at the apartment watching Seinfeld. Marty laughs uproariously and asks his dad how come he's not laughing. Jay says he's sitting on top of a volcano of rage and he's got nowhere to direct it. Marty spots a note on the table.
There's a critic screening of the new Sylvester Stallone movie tonight.
What's it about?
Let's see. He plays a concert pianist who...
To the multiplex!
Yeah!
And roll credits. Another recurring gag on the critic occurs at the end of the closing credits. An usher walks into a movie theater and informs Jay that the show is over, and Jay responds to him. They didn't make as many of these as the other opening credit gags, so some of them are repeated throughout the show's run. Anyway, in this episode, the usher walks up to Jay and says in a voice reminiscent of the squeaky-voiced teenager from The Simpsons, "Excuse me, sir, the show's over." And Jay replies, "Get away, zit face." So there you have it, the first episode of The Critic. I love the show so much. I'm honestly surprised that there are, as far as I know, really aren't any podcasts out there that are already covering it. So who knows, I might do more episodes beyond this first episode for the first season on ABC and the first episode for the second season on Fox. We'll just have to wait and see how it goes. But like I said, I'm going to try to get that other episode about The Critic done by the end of the month. And if anything else comes out in September, I'm not quite sure just yet, but keep an eye out to keep posted. October, I'm going to try for another theme, and this one actually kind of makes sense. I've looked around on Netflix and various other streaming sites for all sorts of horror movies that I have in my various queues. Good ones, bad ones, whatever I find. And I've decided that I will try to watch as many as I can for the month of October and do a podcast about them. The movies will be chosen at random by me, using a random number generator, and depending on whether or not the movie is good or terrible, that will depend on whether or not I cover it as an episode of Everything's Fantastic, or an episode of This Is Gonna Suck. Like I said, I will try to do as many as I can in the month of October. It might be kind of difficult, since as I've stated before, I'm working full-time now, so that means, you know, less free hours of the day for me, and also it's going to be rehearsal and going into production for the Rocky Horror Show at Gettysburg Community Theater Halloween weekend. So again, that's another activity that's taking up my time. But you know what? I'm sure you can guess which activity of those two that I enjoy more than the other. Go ahead. You'll never guess. Anyway, yeah, I'm going to try to find time to watch and podcast about these movies. So keep an eye on Facebook and Twitter and wherever else I post in order to learn what's happening. So that will do it for this episode. Thank you again for listening. Questions, comments, feedback, and so forth can be sent to chrismcg1983@gmail.com. That's chrismcg1983@gmail.com. If you'd like to support the show, please consider visiting my Patreon page and becoming a patron over there. That's www.patreon.com/DramaGuyCJM. That's DramaGuyCJM. And for becoming a patron and contributing for as little as $1 per podcast episode that I post, I will thank you and acknowledge you by name at the end of every podcast episode I do, and we've reached that time. So once again, thank you to my current patrons, Rachel Delecta and Eddie Landis. Your support is greatly appreciated. Okay, that will do it for this episode of Everything's Fantastic. Thank you for listening, and I will talk to you next time.